You can hear me okay? If I speak this loud? All right, great. So yeah, if you just take that, you can leave at any point. That's all I had to say. Worked for 5 years on that one quote, and so that's, no. But the title of the talk is The Artist and Slavery. Have two parts to it. Part one is art as a vehicle for truth, especially in the too much information age. We can unpack that when we get to it, and then we'll look at the second half, art in aftercare. And so it's essentially, speaking from our experience, we were invited here not because I'm an eloquent speaker, but because we have some history now as 7 years with our group, Jubilee, doing what part one is talking about, and then more recently with our new organization, Arts Aftercare, for the second part of things. So I'd love to introduce the rest of the band, because they're here, and they are certainly an inspiration to me all the time. Oh, for the recording, okay. Yeah.
Sweet. If you missed that, go to livejubilee.org for some music, too.
Sweet, cheers. So stand up, guys. This is Jubilee. We have my wife Grace, who plays keyboard and inspires a lot of the songs. My daughter Harper over there with one foot up in the air, taking a nap. I think she's 9 months old and is the inspiration for the other half of the songs. No, I was kidding. But and then we have Emily, who plays cello, Stephen, who plays drums, Peter on bass, and Johnny playing guitar. And then can we get a big hand of a round of applause for our tour nanny, my mother-in-law, Jeannie. So, yeah, I think community is one of the big, just things we're all experiencing here, and what is part of the sustainability of these efforts is to not reinvent the wheel in isolation, to not burn out or get discouraged feeling like nothing's going to happen and that you can't make it happen, so it's not worth trying anymore. But when you see other people doing things, you get ideas. It's much more efficient. It's a lot more fun. And from a Christian point of view, seems to be that would be the way God would have it done, as one body that has many gifts. Just like the ecosystems that we live in that have their variety, that work together, and then also just the actual biological body and all its parts. So I take it that probably a lot of you came here and have something to do with the arts, or at least like art or music. Is that true? So I am happy to kind of guide the discussion, but it is wonderful to be in this community, and I would love for people to, if you just feel something welling up, this can be more of a dialogue than just me talking. So if you have something to say, please say it. And I would love to talk and get to know as many people as possible afterwards as well. So I thought it'd be fitting to ask our multi-talented drummer to start us off with a form of art in slam poetry. So Stephen is going to present a poem. What's the title of it?
Well, which one do you want to do?
Do two.
Pancreas.
The pancreas one? Okay. So this one is called The Intestine Question.
Oh, wait. I'm going to come hang out with you, brother.
Hang out, sweet.
Yeah, this is cool.
I've never gotten to do this before with somebody so close. And it starts with a verse from 1 John that says, whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need, yet shutteth up his bowels of compassion against him, how can the love of God dwell in him? Well, in the New Testament, the bowels were the birthplace of human emotion. But these days, it's everything heart. All the time, heart, heart, heart. Well, I propose it's time for another revision. Because there's never been a place so worthy to hold those dove flutters from your sidewalk breaths as the pancreas. Now, for those that didn't know, the pancreas secretes enzymes to help you digest stuff, and you'll hear phrases straight from my mouth like, "Girl, I've never digested so well as when we're together." Think of the world as a giant small intestine, and this as a grand opportunity to secrete new expressions from the daily flow of life. Feel free to try these with a close friend. You'll always have an enzyme in my pancreas. The way you walk makes my pancreas go straight to my head. My pancreas overflows with sweet musings about the round rivers of fatty acids in your eyes. And those are just a few. Don't be afraid of the looks you might get, and if you ever need support, I'll be around. Just look for the man wearing his pancreas on his sleeve.
Awesome. So he just gave you a bunch of words that can be written out in black and white, and there's information in that, but something about the arts and one just general, you know, thing to say at the beginning is just, I love how it just, it makes information so much more human and well-rounded. And that's getting at part of this this vehicle for truth, just trying to find ways that we're getting beyond just the cognitive. We're more than that as a human being. And so just hearing Stephen, just with words, not even music, not images, but with his words, he's, you know, creating pictures and expressing more humanity than just, you know, just the letters coming together there. So thanks, Stephen. That was a good way to start things off here. All right, part one, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. So, got these slides to guide me through. Growing up in the shadow of the civil rights movement, I wish I'd been born in 1945. Now, you heard a little introduction about me. This is another part of me. I went to public schools, and like most people, we ended up getting to American history and the civil rights movement, and that's when I got really excited and really depressed at the same time, because that just seems like the coolest time to have been on the planet. And some of you were there for it and can, you know, speak to your own experience of it. But being 15, 16 years old and seeing images of Martin Luther King Jr. and others, I would have liked to have been born in 1945. It's conceived in optimism. World War II just ends. This is the famous kiss in Times Square. So the war is over, there's love, I'm born the next year. And then I turn 18 years old for the March on Washington. That image just blew me away when I saw it in my school-issued textbook. All those people, and 18, if I was born in 1945, 18 years old would be a good time to, all right, I can kind of appreciate some of what's being said. Be a great time, great age to be at that event in 1963. And then that would also put me at 26 for Woodstock, which I could still have a good time, but maybe I would have learned enough to have avoided some of the pitfalls of that time period as well. But I get to catch Jimi Hendrix here at Woodstock in 69. This image really struck me. I think this was... Kent State, exactly. Thank you very much. I thought that was one of the best images of flower power for me, of not just, flower power, but the philosophy there of living for more than, you know, not violence, and it's a compelling, philosophy of life. There's more to get into in terms of how it actually works out or did or didn't work out and all that conversation, but for today, you can appreciate this image and the statement there being made. And of course, the artists of the time, and I don't have pictures of all of them, but as somebody that appreciates art and music, as well as we all are here because we care about the issue of human trafficking, the March on Washington, just in 1963, that has become a very inspirational Ebenezer, you know, a place, the value of rocks being placed to remind you of something important that happened, going back to the Old Testament of the Bible. And what an Ebenezer is was a pile of stones. When the Hebrews crossed through the River Jordan, they picked up the stones and built an altar and made a big pile there to say, let's remember what happened. And I think we still have some of those things today. That's the point of some of our art, is in monuments, the Lincoln Memorial. We want to remember something that's worth remembering. And so let's put something huge right there to remember it by. And so, anyway, yeah, I was super jealous, again, very inspired and very depressed that I wasn't there. Again, growing up in the shadow of all this incredible history. So the artists of that time period, the music, the songs, also just the eloquence and the words, the wordsmiths of the time, Martin Luther King Jr. in his I Have a Dream speech. There's others. I don't know who your favorites are from that time period. But a question arises, is what was so powerful about their art? Was it powerful? Because you can just sort of intuitively be drawn to something and then begin to ask questions and try to dissect and understand it better. So let's take a quick look back at that time period at some examples that were inspirational for me, and you probably remember as well. Let's see, cross your fingers, see if the internet's working for us. Okay. I don't know how well you'll be able to hear this. Thank you, Joan. We shall live in peace. Oh, thanks, Emily. Great. Let's see. Whoops. Back. Okay. So that link's not going to work for us. Let's try this one. Had Bob Dylan, The Times Era Changing on there, but I think we all know that song. powerful. Again, a human being, you could type that out, and the written word does certainly have power, but embodied with the cadence, the phrasing, the just his voice, the spirit, you can hear more than just the cognitive content come through in the delivery there. And it's so compelling to us as human beings to experience that. And I think that's getting into art, and that's getting into the sense of what God created, and the power of the human voice and human expression going beyond just black and white facts, but really communicating to more of the human, to the heart, to the soul, to all that we are. I think this is probably going to happen. I feel like there's a lot of bright people out there, and we've been hearing from them today. But I think 2013 in August will be the 50-year mark from this speech that you just heard. And I really hope, and I do believe that they will make use of that. And so here's where I started in my story, started to engage with human trafficking. I thought, okay, well, bummer. You know, I wasn't there to put flowers in the gun barrels. I wasn't there to hear Bob Dylan and Joan Baez sing, or to hear Martin Luther King speak from the Word. So I am alive now. It's 2011, and in 2013, again, it's going to be 50 years from that incredible event. So what would his State of the Union address? What would how would he catch us up to speed, do you think? I was asking myself that question. I mean, any of you, what do you think he would talk about? Modern-day slavery. All right. You'll get your money afterwards. So. It really does seem to, you can trace your finger of what's happened since then, and we can all be proud and appreciate the noble work that's been done. People of color can vote, and we have President Obama today. Whether you politically agree or not, just the fact that our nation has come to a place where we do have Mr. Obama as our president has shown an incredible amount of change that's happened in the hearts of Americans and just American history. But at the same time, I do think that when I ask myself that question, what do you think Martin Luther King Jr. would say today, and if I was able to be there to take it in, I think he would talk about the fact that although slavery became illegal and although African Americans can vote in the United States today, that slavery still exists in our own country. And you guys are probably familiar with a lot of the facts, so I'll just throw out a couple of them that were compelling to me. The sheer fact that there's more human beings, individuals in slavery now than during the 400 years of the African slave trade combined, that was crazy to hear about. The fact that the average worth of a slave or the price has changed from the equivalent of $40,000 today, and now a slave, the average price is $90. So if you just think about what that implies, if you own a Lexus, how do you treat that? Or if you own a paper cup, you go from something that you invest in something that has that much value because, you know, like on a farm, for instance, if you have a $40,000 tractor, you're going to put gas in it, you're going to get the oil changed, you're going to treat it a certain way because it has that much value. But what I've heard from folks like Kevin Bales, who I think was the one that published the 27 million in the National Geographic, and who I heard speak and mention the $90 value, is just that it really is utilitarian. It's you don't even have, even if you don't see them as a human being with dignity, you don't even see the price tag anymore as you know, it being worthwhile to take care of your investment just from an economical standpoint. Now it's cheaper, and you get more out of just using it like a paper cup till it breaks and throw it away. And so not only are there more human beings than ever before enslaved in the planet right now, but they are actually treated far worse and conditions are worse than they've ever been. So yes, I think that although I did miss a groovy period of human history, there's plenty to do. And that gives you that odd sort of hope and odd sort of encouragement, or I don't know what to say, but just, yeah, a sense that there is really honorable, needed work to be done and that we're alive for it. And so whether your hair is long or not, there's work to be done. Right? Thank you. Okay. So next slide. Okay, so this idea, good art is a powerful vehicle for truth. Sit with that for a moment. I've got some examples of little good and bad. I'm not trying to make any, you know, statements. Astro Gilberto. Jubilee used to play Brazilian jazz, and we've covered some really great Brazilian jazz over the years. Astro Gilberto has one of my favorite female voices in the entire world. But let's look at her website for a minute here. I mean, that's a good-looking picture, but let's scroll down. We've got, I like the color purple, nothing wrong with that. Okay, oh, there we go. So this is, I mean, yeah, it's not something to make fun of the content here. Again, like, this is probably all great stuff, and I really am not even getting into that, so I don't even know a lot of what that says, but I just wanted to compare, you know, again, this idea that we have some information, don't we, about the world that we were just talking about, and if we're to be compelling to other people and engage them, we want to engage their whole humanity, and we also want to just be, again, as David Bastone was mentioning, just be innovative and be smart in our advocacy. And so, if you're not a criminal investigator or if you're not able to work directly in the field as a lawyer, trying to get convictions for those that have been brought under arrest, then we need graphic designers. We need the artists to help bring this truth in compelling ways to our public. So, thank you, Mr. Tap Dance Hat Guy. But anyway, she's an incredible artist, and her website could use a makeover, in my opinion. So let's look at a better site. Again, not endorsing him. I am from Hawaii, but and I don't know how I could make this smaller or not. It's kind of harder to see at this point. But anyway, just the way things are laid out, and it's just much more inviting. I mean, to some degree, art's subjective. Some of you might be saying, hey, I like that kitty. What are you talking about? I'm not not interested in this tin can and whatnot. But I think if we took a vote, overall, people would be more intrigued and pulled in to get into the content, the information, through good design, through art, good art. Okay. Again, on this theme of we have information, but how do we take information and make it human and make it really connect with people in a way that is important? Let's take a look at, this is a good friend of mine. His name is John Escher. He shot our first music video, which is on our website, if you care to see it. And this is, I just thought this was a good example of how he's taking, this is an advertisement for a good old-fashioned church picnic. And he presents some information on the number of churches in the community and kind of just offering a vision for what things could be like if the whole county got together and connected. And just look at how, again, we can use art and design as a way to not just state facts in a list in a black and white way. Check out this example of good presentation of information.
How many Christian churches are there in Clark County? 12? Maybe 60? The actual number is closer to 200, but according to Jesus, there's just one. In John 17, he prayed that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. He's talking about us, and although we're many members, we are still parts of one body. And together in Clark County, we're over 100,000 believers strong. Imagine what could happen if we all worked together. We would know how to pray for each other, existing ministries would be strengthened, and we'd be unified in what God is doing in our community. This sounds like a great idea, but where do we begin? how do we come together as one body? Well, for starters, we're going to have an all-county church picnic. That's right, a good old-fashioned church picnic, and you're invited. Bring some food, spread out a blanket, and enjoy some fellowship in the park. There'll be uplifting music, activities for the kids, and it's totally free. So grab your family and friends and come join us at the All County Church Picnic. We'll see you there.
Okay, so yeah, just a quick example of that's more engaging. People are going to take in that information, which is the point, right? We're here to let people know about slavery. If you're coming from a faith background, letting people know that God cares about that, and that's an important part of understanding who we are and how the world is to be reshaped. And so I just think it's great to pay attention to ways that people are trying to get this information and have it be received. And again, yeah, I maybe now's a good time to bring up that header again for the talk. So art for awareness, art in the too much information age, how art as a powerful vehicle for truth can fly over the spam filters of our head and connect with our hearts. So the first half of that, in the too much information age, I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but just, you know, we've had different ages throughout time, the different like iron and bronze ages, bringing us to a point of agriculture as human society has developed, and that we have really entered a scientific and information age, and that we now in our talks we're talking about iPods and ways to scan clothing items, and everyone is usually on the internet quite a bit of their lives, and there's just an inundation. There's so much information at your fingertips that you're not sure what to do with it. And so I think that brings you fatigue, doesn't it? Of how do you take all that in? How do you sift it out and know what is really worth thinking about and sitting with and having that come into your life and process that? And so I'm suggesting that we also, not only do we have spam filters in our email boxes, but we also have a practical sort of a spam filter just in our heads in order to be sane, in order to go through our days and not be totally overwhelmed. I think the same thing is happening. And so, again, if we have this important information from God, from His Word, and also just statistics, descriptions of the landscape of what's going on in the world today with human trafficking, how do we import that? How do we get that to people, especially when they got their spam filters blocking, you know, all the statistics coming at us? Because even people that would care about this, just through the fatigue, unless we find ways to connect with them in a more powerful way, the spam filter is just going to block it out a lot of times. So that's where I feel like art is a powerful vehicle for finding ways through or over that spam filter. When you see a video that's engaging more than just your brain, it's engaging your sense of humor, it's engaging your emotions, your experiences, and then again, not just through graphic design and a nice video like that, but when you hear Martin Luther King speak, when you hear Joan Baez sing, or Billie Holiday, others with soul in their voice, there is more of a human connection, and I feel like you engage people in a way where you're not coming up and as a vacuum salesman knocking on the door with, here is information for you about this and that, you know? My recycling bin is full with all the credit card information that I get already or offers, so I don't have time or capacity for that. But it's more like when you approach someone as a human being through the arts of, I've sat with this, and this is, again, this is speaking from our experience now over 7 years, when we have a chance to play our music, which is, it's beautiful, it's a gift from God, and for me it's one of the most thorough ways that I can journal and sift through my experiences to get at really what's worth thinking about and what's worth remembering. It allows me to distill down the cognitive, to put the emotional level of the music with that, come together in community and talk about that with the band members and then present that as a group. It's an incredible gift from our God to be able to process our experiences. And then after that, when we do play our music, without saying a word about human trafficking or without saying a word about our faith, people come up to us and ask us questions. But then in a lot of contexts, we not only just get to talk with people after the show, but we do present from the stage. And we've just found ourselves able to not just be able to speak at conferences or at churches, but we're playing at bars. We're talking to Governor Gregoire after one of our concerts. Music and the arts just connect us, you know, through every set of experiences, age, demographic, political views. It's a human expression, and you just connect with people. It's like Harper as a little baby. All of a sudden, we just became friends with like 90 million people, like in one instant, because they relate so well to who she is. And I think the arts are like that too. There's just more to gravitate towards, and so. I think it's wonderful that you are artists and that you're here, and just that we think about the important role that we have. I would also suggest as examples, so we've seen design, we've seen video, we've heard some music. What about God himself? He has a message, and how is he communicated to us throughout time? He came in the flesh eventually, fully incarnating the Word, the truth. And when the truth and the Word walked amongst us, what did he do? If you look at Luke chapter 15, you have a little context starting things up here. From verse 1, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.' Then Jesus told them this parable." And I'll stop. So you've got tax collectors muttering, people that, you know, aren't very receptive to Christ and his message. And so what does he do? Verse 3, "Then Jesus told them this parable." So he goes into storytelling. And that particular parable is followed by two or three others, but the first one is the parable of the lost sheep. Then he tells the parable of the lost coin, the parable of the lost son, the prodigal son. So we see that God himself, our source of life, our source of wisdom, in communicating truth and his message of love to us, he became a human being. He related to us through that. And then also his primary mode of teaching was in telling stories, which was one of the greatest, art forms of that time, and still is. Also, another example from Scripture would be when David, in one of his weaker moments after seeing someone bathing on the roof, we know the story. It's a little hot to get into here, but. Essentially, he screwed up, and guys screw up a lot. Girls screw up too. We all do. But so anyway, so Nathan comes in to the king, who could have him executed. It's a dangerous time to bring truth to somebody. Oftentimes, you know, the most important truth is truth you don't want to hear. And this message is very inconvenient and disturbing to people's plush lifestyle. And so we also have a message that's not easy to share. So what did Nathan do? He comes and tells a story and gets David so swept up in it that he's pissed and he's ready to, you know, do damage to the character in the story. And then it gets turned that's actually about you, David. So those are great examples, I think, also of just how art can communicate important truth. So let me check the time here. Looks like we got about 10 minutes. I could go on and on. My notes are kind of ridiculous, actually. And as a musician on tour, getting up at 5:30 and getting here for the sound check, I'm surprised my brain is actually still functioning. So yeah, why don't I just concluding part one? we have that art appreciates and engages our whole humanity with its message. And that also it's especially important as a vehicle for truth now that we live in the age of the spam filter and too much information. So then the to-do item is to use art to raise awareness and funds to fight slavery, to share the gospel, anything that's worth sharing. Just let's be mindful of how we can be creative and compelling and holistic in the way that we communicate this truth. Okay. Oh, yeah. I get to use the band again here at this moment. This is good. So you guys don't really have to stand up, but I'd like you to, actually, yeah. Yeah, they don't even know what they're doing, actually, so this is even more fun. Let's just enjoy a moment of them being... Okay. Let's all, we're in the choir room. Actually, yeah, could you all stand up, please? Okay, I'll try to pick a key that's not going to make us all screech, but we should all know these words. That's a little low. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see. Through many dangers, toils, I have already come. 'Tis grace has brought me safe thus far, and grace will delightful. Right on. Well, please have a seat again.
You want me to tell you about time when you have to
warm
up, give you some thoughts?
Sure. Pick out 10 minutes?
Oh, yeah. No, you're fine.
Okay.
For a good 20. I'll just wait.
Okay. So who knows the story behind that song? Anybody? Would you like to share?
Joining with William Wilberforce in fighting against the legality of the slave trade in England, and wrote the words to that song.
Right on. So that's probably one of the, you know, most beloved songs that people know, and especially touching when you hear the story of redemption and conversion of John Newton, right? Is that?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a fitting song for us to sing, and fitting since we're in the choir room. I wanted to just use that as an illustration of taking us into the second part of our time here, talking about art in aftercare. Slavery thoroughly abuses the whole human being, body, mind, and soul. Our care for recovering victims must also address the fullness of personhood. Art and music are powerful, underused tools that can help victims process and heal from the trauma of modern slavery. So I just wanted to start the second section singing together, just as an illustration of how In music, again, we're singing the meaning of the words. We're singing a tune that has a certain major or minor feel that can be generally connected to certain ways that we feel emotionally. And that you didn't just read that, you squeezed it out of your flesh to make that come to life. And not only did you do that as an individual, but we all just did that together in harmony. Emily, nice job on your harmony. So we have been, for the past 7 years, we've been using music to raise awareness, and we are still doing it because we enjoy it and because we feel like there's some value to it for reasons we've just covered. In those 7 years, we became more familiar with the landscape of modern slavery, not only the statistics, but getting to know some of the people, some of the heroes that are doing the work, hearing their stories. We've been connected to the International Justice Mission for many years and have been to their global prayer gathering in Washington, D.C., where they, it's really an incredible weekend where they fly in the heads of their staff from, 14 different parts of the world, from Latin America to Africa to Southeast Asia. And so you're there in a time just hearing essentially over the last year, the praises and the prayer requests, what has happened that we can be thankful and celebrate, and then also what's next? What do we need to pray about, and what's the work about right now? In those experiences, we've gotten to shake hands with people that have been freed from slavery, and we've been able to shake the hands of those that have helped free people from slavery, which is a chilling, beautiful experience. And then take that and worship God together with people from all over the world and hearing people pray in these different languages. And it's the closest thing to what I imagine as, our gathered community in glory. It's a foretaste of that, to get to see so many people from so many different parts of the world that are risking their necks for truth. They're not just talking about it, but people that are literally going up against the Russian mafia or dealing with powerful, deadly people. So not only has that just been really encouraging and taken it beyond the cognitive, but really putting it in your flesh, this reality of slavery, by shaking a hand that was in slavery. But through that, we've also learned of just the importance of aftercare, and that, again, people are so thoroughly traumatized and abused. It's body, heart, mind, soul, just all of us are, all of the human being is involved in slavery. And so when somebody comes out of slavery, that's not obviously the end of the story, and you can't give them $50 and slap them on the butt and tell them to, have a good life. They need holistic care. And so we've just been hearing about that. We've been hearing about what that looks like, and that it takes years to do it properly, because you're trying to teach somebody who can't. A lot of times we hear stories of someone that can't go back to the village that they're from, because in that culture, if someone's been prostituted, they're unclean and they're not accepted. So just you imagine someone coming out of slavery not only needing to find a new way to gain employment, to earn a living, because oftentimes people go back into prostitution once they're brought out of it because they don't know any other way to make a living. And there's lots to get into, and you're a group that's been hearing about these issues, so I won't spend any more time on that. But one thing that came up when we said, hey, we're musicians, we're letting people know about slavery through art, we kept hearing from people saying, well, that's awesome, and that's really wonderful, and I here's a story about how art was powerful at this aftercare facility. And one example of that is, I get her name wrong all the time, so is it Marin or?
Marla.
See, I did it again. Marla is a friend of Grace's who has her master's in counseling that has been working with child soldiers coming out of the Lord's Resistance Army in Uganda, and she was describing from her own personal experience just how you're trying to help these kids to process what they've been through, but you're in a non-Western setting with kids, and so you're not able to just sit down from each other across on the couch and So tell me, as you're smoking your pipe or whatever, you know, tell me what you've been through. They're just, children are not often as able to communicate that. And also in a lot of non-Western parts of the world, that's just not how life is processed as much anyway. It's much more communal. It's much more through the art, the arts. And so she was saying that eventually what really was a powerful breakthrough was when she gave paper and crayons to the kids and just said, well, why don't you draw me something from before you were rescued and draw me something from after you were rescued. And the kids then didn't have to, they weren't under the pressure to say anything particular, to articulate anything, but they were just able to just do whatever they could. And just they drew, and they drew some really gruesome pictures of what had happened. And then she was then able to say, well, okay, tell me about that, or what did you draw, and why did you draw that? And so that got them on the first rung of the ladder to then be able to start climbing out of that experience and not having that, you know, stuffed inside them waiting to erupt or to really hijack their life at various moments. But that helped them to, you can't change the story of what they've been through, but you can change the way that the victim views that story afterwards. And that can be very powerful in reshaping what that experience means in their life. It doesn't have to define them anymore, and that they don't have to hold that in. There's other examples. And one reason I also wanted to sing together was just imagine if you've just been living in a dark hole, basically. That's literally what it is if you're in a lot of these brothel situations where girls are stuffed into a train. They emerge 2 days later without seeing any light. They're snuck in like a sewer passageway into some dungeonous situation and then brought up only to serve customers. So literally, it's a dark, ugly existence. And so if someone just comes out of that, what's more fitting than to take them and put them into a situation where you put something beautiful in their lives to think about? You give them a camera, you give them, you know, some paper and pens, and allow them to do something beautiful, to take pictures of flowers, or to, and then publish that into a book and make them a part of this cool project. Those are examples we have on our coffee table at home. So that was very inspiring to us to just say, okay, part A, raise awareness and how the arts can be really powerful for that, as we talked about. But then also in the recovery process, just how it's something that can really, music and art therapy, as I mentioned, are an underused tool. We're Arts Aftercare is our new organization based in Seattle. If this rings a bell with people, we'd love to be in contact with you, because we're growing, we're doing research, we're trying to be very careful because it's such a sensitive type of endeavor. You know, the last thing you want to do is just come in with some great idea and haphazardly try to help people. That's not wise. And so we're teaming up with Mars Hill Graduate School, Counseling School, and others, professional music and arts therapists that are guiding this and bringing us together. But the end vision is just to bring more of the arts into aftercare. And music and art therapy are fairly young disciplines as it is. In Washington State, just like a year ago, Seattle Pacific University, where I attended, started the first accredited music therapy program in the entire state of Washington. And I forget how many states even have them. So it's very new, and that's exciting too for me as an artist, and I think for other artists, is just to learn about this growing field. And so we've got one of the biggest problems of our day, if not the biggest, is modern-day slavery. And we have this new field of art and music therapy. And so it's just beautiful, the opportunity for people to get involved and make a difference in not only raising awareness, but also just helping to bring the arts to heal in these situations. To me, it's just very exciting to, and I think as artists, you can relate to that, that again, as a gift from God, music helps to, I think it's part of, you know, the Holy Spirit's work of those groans that are beyond words. That music can help that along. When we play at wedding receptions, it never fails. Probably half the time, the father of the bride comes up and says, I was doing fine until you started playing that song, and then I started crying. You know, that music kind of unlocks and gives you permission often to be human, to be fully human, and to bring all of yourself into your experience. And I think that's a gift from the Father that he's creative and he is beautiful, and that the arts really help us to fully understand him and fully understand life and do life well and to thrive. So,
can I share a quick story?
Sure. Yep.
So I teach cello lessons in Seattle, and I have a gamut of ages that I teach, from like four years old to 65 years old. And I resonated with this aspect on my second lesson with my second student ever. And she was a mom who had a 10-year-old daughter. And she was short, very petite, precious woman. And the week previously, I had taught her how to play with better tone, just in general, just better tone. And we're sitting there in our lesson, and we're going through scales, like the alphabet of music, and she starts to cry, and I thought, what have I done? Did I say something? And she just said, it's so big. And it's coming from me. And she, we started talking about it, and through conversing after doing scales, we realized she has gone through her whole life with everyone looking down on her. And here we were sitting in a lesson, eye to eye, and she was making just as much sound as I was. And when I heard that and I made that connection, I was like, whoa, she's not even... Like, the only trauma that's occurred to her has been from her parents, like the rest of us. But I figured if I can do that with my lessons, like with my students, I wonder what I can do with the people that I talk about on stage when I'm playing. So just want to share that.
Awesome. That's an awesome anecdote.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope this can be constructive for each of us to just think about how art, how whatever, I figure as you responded to that a lot of you are artists or connected to artists or at least enjoy it. I think it's a beautiful challenge. I think it's fitting to the call of our particular time, that slavery is one of our big issues, and that raising awareness about it, I feel like the artists have a lot to contribute in that area. Again, in the too much information age, we need to bring more humanity, more holistic communication to people for it to really connect and have meaning. And then also just in this fledgling discipline of art and music therapy, how there's a lot of room for people to jump in. There's literally, we got 23 papers back from 23 different students in a third year graduate program at Mars Hill that said, yeah, I found a few things is all I could find, like in terms of using articles that have already been written and academic work that's been done on the use of art and music therapy or art or music therapy in a setting with victims of human trafficking. So it's brand new. We need people to do that work so that we can bring art and music cautiously and wisely and use it well. I appreciate your attention. And I'd love to, I don't know where people are at, but can I pray? Is that all right?
The whole area of theater and dance, you didn't really touch on. And I have a friend who has been doing this. She first went to Poland and Latvia and began schools for kids just coming out of communism who have no self-esteem, no concept of this, and started schools of physical theater. And this is just, it's been going on for 20 years now, but one of the advocacy things that she has done is she did play at the Fringe Festival in Edinburgh that was a human trafficking theme. And this is just a really open door for letting people know what's going on, but also as a healing agent, as you work with other people and become involved in.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. And then before I do close this in prayer, if you want to write down, again, Arts Aftercare is the organization that we've started. It's not just us band members. We have other directors, and we're connected to a great bunch of folks. And so it's a really exciting organization that has really been flourishing lately. And so if this interests you, we basically just love, at the moment, we're trying to make the website just a pool of resources and just getting people connected. And we're in Seattle, so we're trying to bring the healing power of the arts internationally, but also locally. And so in Seattle, we already have volunteers that are working at drop-in centers where at-risk and street youth come. And so people that, if you're not already a trained arts or music therapist, there's ways that you can still connect in appropriate ways right away. And so we're trying to connect with folks in the Bay Area to do the same thing. So if you're in here too and you're thinking, huh, that might be me, that I could help connect some dots and get some things happening in the Bay Area, we're really wanting to make that a reality domestically as well as internationally. So if you care to take it down, the website for Arts Aftercare, it's pretty tricky. www.artsaftercare.org. And then, and then for the band, if you care, if you're in a band or if you would like our group to come play or to speak at, you know, at events that you have at a school, at a church, we do that sort of thing too. And our band's website is livejubilee, JUBILEE.org. And so, let me close in prayer here. Father, thank you that you are creative, that you created everything, that we're made in your image, and so therefore it's very natural and rational that we're creative also, and that you take delight in that. Thank you for the individual stories that are here, the individual experiences, networks, just all the things that make us who we are. We want to lift back to you, Father, and especially we're just trying to be mindful today of how we can communicate your love to victims of human trafficking and help them heal with the beauty of music, of this whole world that you've created, God, and all the ways that we can encounter you and encounter healthy living. We just we ask that to be made present and available for victims of human trafficking, and we also pray that you would inspire us, give us innovation and creativity to communicate well the message of modern day slavery, and to communicate to your church too, to get back into your word, to see that you care deeply about this, that to take care of the orphan, the widow, the oppressed is true worship of you, Father. We just pray for you to help us in that, and we smile knowing that that you're in control, and that there's nothing for us to fear, but we can just delight and enjoy who you are and marvel at the fact that you include us in restoring your world to its full splendor. And thank you for the joy of being with brothers and sisters, and we just pray that you'd give us today our daily bread, and that Holy Spirit, you would speak to our hearts and remind us of just whatever it is we should take away from this session. But most of all, just always speak our name to us. Just take us back to step one, that we are created for love, Father. There's nothing we have to do to prove ourselves. We're fully accepted. And let that freedom in our identity in you, Father, give us courage and just so we can joyfully walk into challenging situations and have no fear. And thank you that you're in control of the future, and that we know that slavery will end. And we just pray that people would get to know you and get to know your love for us as we proclaim from your word that you care about people, and that you care that all of us would be seen as worthy and as your children. So it's not about our eloquence, Father. Thank you for speaking from to our hearts this morning from your Spirit, and just pray for the rest of the time that we would be mindful of what we should learn this at the rest of the conference. So We give you all this, and we are grateful and thank you in the name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you. Don, how are you?
I'm the creative arts pastor here at
Harvard. Oh, wonderful.
This sounds weird. I'm in Seattle a couple times a year.
Okay.
March, I think I'm up there.
What's that?
March, I think I'm up there.
Oh, March, you're up. Okay.
I would love to sit down and take you to lunch to hear. This is what you do is just so what I try to do here.
Awesome. Right on.
And wide spectrum, lots of.